Welcome back to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. Today's episode is powered by TD Ameritrade. Every stroke counts on the scorecard and every penny counts in the market. That's why TD Ameritrade is committed to straightforward pricing with no surprises, so you're free to swing with confidence. Visit tdameritrade.com/friedegg. Member SIPC. We are back with another episode, and today we are joined by Craig Moore. He is the head of grounds at Marquette Golf Club, all the way up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Craig is a golf course architecture, golf history nut, and takes meticulous care of the courses up at Marquette. He has both a Golden Age design in the Langford Moreau 9 Heritage course at Marquette, as well as the modern Mike DeVries 18 holes at Gray Walls. So Craig is deeply into architecture and also maintains a course in one of the harshest and shortest seasons in the United States. So we talk a little bit about architecture, the courses, and the unique challenges that he has up in Marquette, Michigan. Enjoy the podcast.
I miss a green, for example. I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg lie. I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
All right, Craig, we're here in Marquette, Michigan.
Absolutely, yeah.
What's it like living here?
It's like a fantasy, man. I'll just be honest with you. It's crazy good. You know, you got the extreme of all four seasons. Summers, you can't beat it. If you like winter recreation, you cannot beat it because winter comes, we get snow, and it stays. So, yeah, it's like a fantasy for me.
How much snow and how cold are we talking? I mean, you're almost the northern tip of the continental U.S.
Sure. Yeah. We're the north coast of America up here, we like to call it. We get, you know, right around 230 inches here in the Marquette area. And so when it comes and when it's winter, it's here. But we do have the lake that kind of moderates the temperature, so it doesn't get brutally, brutally cold. We do have some stretches, but nothing like you see in the Dakotas or Minnesota.
So it's an air conditioner in the summer. The Lake Superior is an air conditioner in the summer and a heater in the winter.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So we'll get our 90 degree days in the summer, but it's usually not all day long. We get a little push from the lake and boom, back down to 70. So it's a glorious thing.
So you've been at Gray Walls. You came here right at the construction start. So in Marquette Golf Club's interesting. It's a unique situation where you're semi-private model. You got members,
yeah.
Two golf courses,
yeah.
One modern, one classic. You yeah. kind of have all. You have a 9 built in the 60s.
Yeah.
So you got every type of golf architecture here. Tell us about your life at Marquette Golf Club.
Well, it started out. My wife's born and raised here in Marquette. Okay, I grew up in Lower Michigan. And my father-in-law has been a member here for, God, probably going on 40 years now. And so my wife was on this property when she was younger. But I started dating her back at 99, 2000. Started really coming up here a lot and playing the course. And by then, I had done the Kingsley Club. So I got to know Mike, obviously, real well. And we hit it off. And he'd do site visits up here. And if I was up here, I'd go on the site visit with him. Got to meet Pete Chevrette, who was the previous superintendent and project manager for the Gray Walls course when we were building it. And, you know, we just kind of really hit it off. So that kind of got me up here. My wife got in to get her PhD, so we had to leave for 2 years. We went down to MSU. She completed that. Then the job opened, the head job opened up here, and this was after the construction, everything. We left for a couple of years. So 2006, I got a call from Mike saying, hey, Pete's leaving. You'll probably get a call from somebody at the club here. And lo and behold, Kenny Roscoe gave me a call and came on up for an interview. And it was one of those situations where I walked out of the interview walking out, and I'm like, well, yeah, I know this is a good fit, and I'm pretty sure they do too. And it was kind of a now or never situation for me. It's like either this was the time to come up and be up here, or it wasn't going to happen in this area. So went back, talked to my wife. She was just done with her coursework. She could do her dissertation anywhere. And we headed up here. So made the decision, came up. She's a professor here at Northern now. And so yeah, everything worked out really well.
You grew up golf family, yeah. You know, family of golf nuts. And when did you decide that you really wanted to do the turf?
My dad was one of just a great amateur player, and he was one of the best in the state for many years. And so our summer vacation kind of revolved around his golf schedule. We spent a lot of time up in Petoskey, Charlevoix area. While he was playing the Michigan AM was his big thing.
Yeah, because he was at Belvedere every year for a really long time.
Absolutely, yeah. And so that kind of, you know, playing the courses back down there, you know, and then going up there and walking around to watch him play, it was something like, wow, this is different. Like, this is really cool. Like, what's different about this? So that got me thinking about it. So then I just started reading on it, and everything I could read on architecture, whatever, I just started picking up back then and reading. I went over to, my parents moved to Traverse City, and my older brother, Chris, actually went to look for work for us for the summer. He went over to this course called Mistwood, went over there. They were doing another 9, okay? They had an 18, they built another 9. And I went over there and did the construction on that 9. And I worked for Dan Lucas, who's currently at the Kingsley Club, did the Kingsley Club. And that's what got me hooked, like right then. Like that summer of construction, I was like, wow, this is really cool. And from then, I just stayed focused. And I kind of just, you know, kind of person where, well, that's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to go do it, you know. And so I just went and did it. So I went to Michigan State and got the crop and soil science degree and turf grass management and
so that's where you met Mike. Was that Kingsley?
Kingsley's
Mike
work.
DeVries.
Absolutely. So, yeah, that's where I met Mike DeVries at Kingsley Club. Yeah.
That had to be a pretty cool experience building that course.
It was awesome. Awesome. Yeah, I was able to, another young man by the name of Tim Hall came over from Manchester. And so he joined our crew too. And him and I, a lot of handwork with Mike on the golf course. So a lot of the finishing stuff, you know, Mike was so hands-on with that project. You know, everything got a landscape rake at the end before we seeded it. So we would do all that finishing work with him. And then him and I, you know, pretty much seeded the place. So we're behind all the other activity. So.
And then you were part of this build at Gray Walls.
Absolutely, yeah. So when I came up here in 2003, Pete, who was here before me, became the project manager, and it was just too much for him to even do anything on the Heritage course. So brought me up. He said, here, take this over. When the guys are gone, come over here and give me a hand. So that's what I did. So, you know, running the H, and then at the end of the day, I was just coming over here, and whatever Pete needed, whatever Mike needed, I would just come over here, and we'd work till dark. So,
What... I guess, you know, being part of two builds, like, how would you compare and contrast the two properties? And you know, with Gray Walls is, I think, like, one of these experiences, like, completely different type of golf course than anywhere in America. But, and the Kingsley is also just a wonderful place. But, yeah. Like, what would you say are similarities and differences between the two projects that you saw?
You know, similarities are just the way Mike builds his greens, for instance, you know. With favorable locations and maybe not so favorable locations, you just got to really think when you're going into the green complex where you want to be. Okay, so and you got to think in your previous shot as well. Like, where do you want to put it on the fairway? Yeah, you got a massive fairway, but guess what? You know, you might want to be on that left side. You might not even want to be on that right side, but you got to think about it as you go around. So those are the similarities. There's a lot of banks and stuff you can work with, backstops that you can work with that maybe make some greens that are already big even bigger. Than what they actually are, because you do have those backstops. So,
That's the routing here at Gray Walls is. It's just unbelievable that there's able to get a golf course
so
in here.
Man.
I mean, what were your first impressions of when you came to this site?
that is good. So, doing site visits with Mike, it was a heavily forested piece of property. Okay, and that you wouldn't even know that a lot of these rock outcrops existed because they were just, you know, covered in trees, buried in trees. And so you're walking through these areas and we're wearing the orange vest, you know, and he's telling you to stand here so he can go up there and laser back to your orange vest and kind of get yardages. And yeah, it was just, I'm coming across some of these areas and just shaking my head. In my mind, you know, I get a lot of agronomic thoughts going through my mind, like, how the hell are we going to grow grass here? You know, how the hell is this going to happen? and Mike was persistent. Oh, it's going to work. It's going to be so cool. And it worked. It worked out, but it took the routing here, he had to be, I don't know how many hours Mike put in on it, but he had to just been a major head scratcher for him. Yeah, he had a lot of holes out there that just didn't work out, obviously, to make things connect and keep flowing. But the end routing, the end result is awesome. Because not only, you know, the geology, the topography we have with the hills and the rock, but we also have the gas line that runs through the property that you don't even know is there if you're a golfer. And then we also have the Oriana, which separates the two courses. And so he had those two, you know, environmental restrictions to work with to route around as well. So it wasn't just the rock.
Mm-hmm. What in terms of build, obviously your season is very short here.
Yeah.
What was the building construction process like with such a condensed time to get 18 holes done? Did it take, was it a year, year and a half, 2 years?
So that was a big difference from the Kingsley Club. Okay. At Kingsley, we were the construction crew. Like we did everything. I mean, Dan ran heavy equipment. Mike was obviously on heavy equipment, which he was here too, but just not to the extent that he was on the Kingsley Club. So we had a company called Northern Clearing out of Northern Wisconsin that came and did the construction. So that was definitely different. And they cranked it out. I mean, 2003 was the big construction year, and those guys humped it. I mean, they got her done. Tree work started, you know, the previous years, did some small blasting previous years, but that 2003 was the big year, and I mean, we were mowing turf by the end of the year. So
tell us a little bit about, you know, the, for people that haven't been to Gray Walls, tell us a little bit about the unique, the kind of the landscape. Okay. of the area and the golf course, how it kind of winds its way through the property.
Sure. So Marquette, Michigan sits on the southern tip of the Canadian Shield. Okay. So you got this huge, massive granite formation up in Canada, comes underneath Lake Superior, and then it kind of ends here in Marquette. So you exit Marquette, you get through the Marquette mountain range, you get past the ski hill, and it just flattens out and it's just sand. Okay. So we just have this wild, just bizarre terrain right here. All right. And, full of rock outcrops, okay, very weathered rock outcrops, but the scale of them is just amazing. When you do get into an open area and you see it, it just, you're like, wow, what the heck is that? You know, it's really cool.
Uh-huh. So you know, with this golf course, you've got two, you know, you've got Marquette Golf Club and Gray Walls, which. Yeah. Marquette Golf Club, the original nine was built by Langford Moreau.
Yes.
And then David Gill came in and built nine holes. It, you know, before you got here, what did you know about Langford Moreau and you know, how has that, you know, kind of changed, you know, and educated? Obviously, there's some spectacular golf holes out there. And a little bit about how Langford Moreau got up here. I just asked you like 17 questions.
Yeah. Okay, I'll take that and run. So obviously Langford Moreau, out of the Chicago district, you know, they worked their way north, okay? And as they started getting into northern Wisconsin, into the UP, it's, you know, things back then, they did things different back then. You know, they couldn't just go to a bank and get a loan to build a place, so they had to raise the funds to do it. So, and then up in the Northwoods up here, there wasn't as much money, okay? So they would just start with nine holes, all right? A lot of them never went back to the other nine. They just stayed nine holes. So Langford and Merle, so they might have designed, drawn up 18, but it just didn't get done, okay? And then a lot of the clubs just kind of lost the history of it, you know, and just didn't even realize what they had, which happened here for many, many, many years. So when Mike got on the scene, okay, then all of a sudden, you know, he's obviously a big golf architecture guy, history guy. I am as well. And so we started kind of just bringing that here to the club and getting these people to read it, okay? And they actually didn't even know they had the original routing from Langford Moreau for all 18 up until, gosh, it was probably 2000 or 2001 when Ron Witten actually found a copy of it and brought it to the club's attention. Now going back in the minutes, the history of the minutes in the club, they did actually find a small copy of that, but they just didn't even realize they had it. So then they started recognizing, whoa, you know, we do have something really cool here. And so it's kind of been a pet project of mine, because we don't have much money up here, you know, to just kind of blow things up. We can just, they're here for golf. They want to play golf. And then that's super cool. And so we don't want to disrupt that much either. So kind of a pet project of mine has been those original nine holes over on the Heritage Course to kind of, you know, one, it was the green pads that shrunk up like always happens. Okay. So you had all those lost, the greens pad, lost corridors on the green. So mowing those out to approach height was huge. So you can see the pad. Okay. And now we're in the process of, let's start getting some of them out to green height so we can get those pins back. So we got one back to green height. The rest are all just mowed at least at approach height. So it's pretty cool. So we're doing some tree work, bringing back some shot options off some tees that we had lost. And there's a little bit of bunker work. They didn't do a ton of changes. Like I said, they never had a lot of money, but there is some changes in the bunkers. And it wouldn't be real tough to bring it back, but it's just not a huge priority right now because, you know, the focus is shorter golf season. Let's tee it, baby.
So. Yeah, talk about the short. I mean, it's a golf craze community here. Yeah, what type of volume are you doing on each course and over the course of what? And what's your season like?
We always joke that we always call it the factory. This place is just the factory, man, because people are just rolling. They love their golf carts and they love just going. And we've had seasons upwards of 55,000 rounds on the two courses, which is insane if you think about it. But that was a season where we got going in March, okay? And it was a long fall. They played all the way till into November that year, okay? It's usually right around 45 or so on the two courses, which is still a lot. Majority of that play now is on the Gray Walls course, okay? Just because we get a lot of outside play. And so a lot of the out-of-towners, obviously, they come up here to play the Gray Walls course. And so it's just not as much on the Heritage, but we still do get a lot of rounds on the Heritage. And it seems like every year it kind of keeps building.
Yeah, and with that volume in the short season, you don't have a lot of time. You can't afford a 1 week shutdown to do a project.
No.
So like you illuminated too, you don't have a huge budget here.
No,
not a big staff. You got a small staff.
Yeah.
What are the ways that you've been kind of thrifty, innovative, creative in getting stuff done?
So we have our total budget is right around 700 for 36 holes. Okay, not a lot. And if you played this place, you'd think no way, because I got a great crew and we're able to get a lot of stuff accomplished with not a lot. Our shoulder seasons, some years they don't exist. Okay, and that's when clubs do work on golf courses in the shoulder seasons. And there's some years most years we just don't have it. So that's why we can't do a lot of that stuff. When the snow melts, they literally want the golf course open within a day or two. Okay, so we are grinding it to get it open for them because we understand because we want to golf too, and we all love golf too, and we want to tee it right behind them. So we're gonna get it done for them. And then the same thing in the fall. I mean, they want to play right up to when the snow flies. So that's why a lot of that stuff can't get done. And like I say, shorter season, so we don't want to disrupt their season either with a lot of projects. So, so the tree work on the Heritage Course that we wanted to get done, we decided to do that this past winter. Okay, well, how are we going to pay for it? Okay, because the stuff in the Heritage Course was all handwork, and so now our brains spinning like how can we make this work? How can we make this work? So we had some lumbered acreage over here on the Gray Walls Course. Okay. And we were able to get a logger in, and they were able to do a select cut through these areas, okay? And we were able to make some coin on the lumber, which was awesome. So now we were able to take those dollars, and pay for the work, the handwork they had to get done on the Heritage Course. And so it worked out. So that was one creative way that we were able to get some tree work done in the wintertime, which I'm telling you right now, it wasn't easy. Trying to keep an ice road open in the middle of a golf course up here in the wintertime was not easy. it was trying my patience, but I knew the importance of it. So we bared down and got her on that first location that we worked on.
It's an interesting thing where you're kind of restoring a classic nine holes.
Yeah.
And you're working on this restoration work, but then you've also got this modern golf course where... You're trying to mature it, and we played this morning. You said this place keeps getting better and better.
Yeah.
What type of things do you do? How do you take a golf course? And we see so many. What happened to your nine hole Langford Moreau, where green shrink and it deteriorates after opening, and you see it so many places. Like I played a place maybe last year, which hadn't been open that long, and you're like, God, you already are seeing what you see.
Yeah.
Usually 80 years later, you're starting to see the first effect. So
yeah.
How do you keep a golf course, playing to the architect's intent.
So I kind of have... I kind of have the advantage because I know Mike so well. Okay. And just building on the construction for two of his properties with him, you know? So I know what Mike wants. Okay. And we talk a lot. Okay. About stuff. Especially when he comes up, we're constantly just talking about things on the golf course. Okay. So when we first built the place, you know, you just don't know how everything is going to happen on the golf course. Okay. You don't know exactly how the ball is going to react. Okay. In certain locations. And you just have to watch. Okay, I play a lot of golf, and I play a lot of golf for a reason. I consider myself a surface manager. Okay, we manage the surface for the game. Okay, and that's my priority. Okay, and to me, it's like the best way to do that is actually play. Okay, and watch people play and see where they end up. Okay, and see some frustrations and can you alleviate those frustrations? Okay, so on the Gray Walls property here, there's a lot of areas, some of the native areas. Okay, that maybe grew in some locations that maybe we shouldn't have had it. Okay. So we made some adjustments there, okay? Or maybe we want it there, but it's just not growing the way we want it, okay? So we go in and we manage it differently. We do a lot of flail mowing and cutting just to kind of knock it back. So if your ball does go in there, boom, you see it. You can go in there, get some iron on it, get it out, move on. You're still happy, okay? And you're not in there, you know, on your hands and knees trying to find it, okay? So we're always trying to look at those areas, okay? And then the other part is trying to keep the forest back, okay? You want to keep these corridors open, okay? The original corridors that Mike opened up for the golf course. And if you don't do anything, the saplings are going to grow in. Saplings turn into trees. You know, trees turn into a lousy golf course. So it's constantly fighting that back and managing those locations and keeping it open so people can see those rock features and can see that width, you know, on the golf course and have that to work with.
Yeah, I imagine with like a forest, it's a living thing. Yeah. So if you had to estimate, I never thought about this before, but if you just don't do anything, how much do you think a forest would encroach on a yearly basis? Like a number of feet? Like I've talked to superintendents in the South that say, you know, the Bermuda greens, if you don't, you know, there's a natural creep that are shrinking the greens, but like with a forest, would you lose a couple feet every year?
Yeah, maybe more. Yeah. You don't even realize it is amazing. A lot of photos, I'd look back at a lot of my pictures and kind of see where the lines are and see, okay, well, we got to get back to that line. Okay. We might've lost, we might've had some sapling growth in there. And so we got to get back to that line, just to keep that in place. Yeah.
You talked a little bit about making a change to the golf course. Like, is there a specific one that comes to mind, like that after watching people play?
Yes.
Or playing yourself, or, you know, you got three boys that all play, so you play a ton with them.
Yep. Big one was the right of number one green, okay? There was a native area that kind of pushed up on one green, and that was a frustration point, because if you missed that green, it rolled in there. Now you're hitting, not only are you hitting on this, trying to lob it up there, but you got to hit on this hay. So that went bye-bye, okay? And that was a big move. Right of number two was another really big one. You miss right on that fairway, it's going to kick right into the natural area, okay? And it was just too thick and too nasty. And so we just had to completely, you know, change the way we managed that area. And now it's much, much more playable. You just get in there, whack your shadow. You're still kind of penalized for hitting it, right? But you're not going to have a lost ball unless you go in the woods. And you can just get in there and hit it out. So those are two big areas.
On the Marquette course, on the original, the Lankford, you've done a ton of tree removal, like you were alluding to. And how have you, with membership, fought, you know, oh, you're taking out trees, you're making this easier, or you're expanding the green, there's more short grass, you're making this easier. Has that been a struggle?
No, it really hasn't. There's some that kind of ask what's going on and kind of question it, you know, and they might think it might get easier until they actually get out there and see it when it's all done. All of a sudden you got this gorgeous vista that you didn't even have before, looking across from one fairway to the other, and they're like, whoa, okay. So, and as far as the greens, no, I mean, they've pretty much embraced it now for the most part that this is really cool and this is the way it should be. So
I noticed the greens played really on that golf course, they're really firm, and I'm guessing that when you got here with the trees and the shrunken greens, was it a softer feel?
It, you know, I wouldn't say it was softer. It was, it still played really firm back mm-hmm. over there. We've always had some water issues on this golf course. The water supply some years isn't adequate to keep things nuclear green, which obviously we don't want to do, but some places do. So they never had the ability to do that. Okay. And so that was actually a good thing. Because over time, you know, they'd run out of water in the summer. They'd keep just enough to kind of get by with the greens and tees, and so things weren't, you know, overly done. So that was actually a good thing.
Yeah. What's been your process with reclaiming those greens? Because you've done a ton of it, and I think there's so many golf courses that fight this problem with shrunken greens. Yeah. And what's worked really well for you? That you've done hasn't worked that well.
So I had a backup mower that I was able to dedicate to lowering these areas down, okay, and lowering the height down, because they were at 2.5 inches. They were mowed at rough height, okay.
And also, like, what are we talking from, you know, say 10 years ago till now? How much green surface are we talking about mowing out that you were missing on a lot of these?
Oh, geez, probably some of them. You know, if you had a, you know, let's say you had a 5,000 square foot green, you know, you might have had 4,000 square feet that was gone, missing. It was rough. Mowed is rough on some of those big Langford greens. So,
holy cow.
Yeah, so there's a lot. And so we took it at rough height. I did a lot of aerifying. Okay, a lot of aerifying, trying to get some of that thatch out. And then a lot of vertical mowing. Okay, and then slowly it was just bumping it down. And then every time I aerified, I'd introduce some bank grass in there as well to kind of get that growing, get that going. Okay. And then it was just slowly lowering down, a little extra fertility to keep it going. And and it probably takes about a year, I'd say, to get it down to approach height where it looks pretty good. And then from there, you know, it would take probably another good year to get it down to greens height, mm-hmm. where it looked good, played good. Yeah, and the density was up where we want it.
And then the bent started to take over.
And the bent would take over, yeah. And you can see all those. Now you go out to 12 where we reclaimed, you can just see the bent lines that... right on the edge of the collar from where I stopped seating.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's incredible how much it's got, you know, and it looks really great because you can see the whole contours now.
Yeah.
And it's, there's so many great pins that weren't there.
Totally lost. Yeah.
It's remarkable. Like, especially you see it on, like, you know, the back of 12, you've got those that, you know, is there any, you know, obviously, like, a big thing is irrigation always. And I saw on 12, like, you've got the heads just in the green. It is what it is.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not going to change that until we replace the irrigation system. It doesn't matter, you know, mm-hmm. at this point. You know, it's not worth the club's money to go in there and move those when it's no big deal. You know, not right now. You know, we'll get there. When we do, one day when the irrigation is replaced, we'll move them to the edge. Yeah. But right now, it's not worth the expense.
Yeah, because I feel like so many people would say, like, you know what, we shouldn't do that because then we'll have this irrigation head. Yeah. But it's like, you know, how many golfers is that going to affect?
Yeah, not many. In fact, every round I've played out there, which is a lot because my kids play out there a lot, I can count on one hand that I've actually just moved the ball over just a little bit just to putt around the head.
Is that the local rule? Just
move, yeah. Just move it over a little bit. It's mm-hmm. no big deal.
Yeah. Now for a quick word from our sponsor. Today's podcast is brought to you by our friends over at BeDratty. Today, I'd love to talk to you about my favorite, probably my favorite piece of apparel in my entire closet. It is the Freebird short. These shorts are the most comfortable thing. Every time I have them clean, I mean, sometimes even when they are on the border of clean, I'm wearing them when I'm lounging around my house. They are made from that same Peruvian cotton that BeDratty is famous for with their polos. These shorts have a little bit of stretch on them, and they're just the most comfortable things to wear around your house. I mean, you can wear them when you're running errands, you can wear them when you're doing lawn work, or you can just wear them when you're sitting watching golf on TV over the weekend. So I highly recommend them. You can get the Freebird short on BeDratty.com. It'll change your life. Trust me. They've got it in both blue, navy, and gray. I love these things. It's basically, you know, it's the most comfortable thing you can wear when you're watching golf on TV on Sundays. So check it out, BeDratty.com. Thank you to them for supporting our podcast. And now back to Craig Moore. You know, it's interesting. We talked a little bit about grass and how, like, the bent takes over eventually. And one of the things I found most interesting at Gray Walls was when you were talking about your guys' choice with the grass. Okay. And it's a hybrid where you have fescue, but 98% of your rounds are cart.
Or, maybe more.
it's a walkable golf course. I would recommend walking it, but you know, I thought I had a, it was you feel like you get a workout in, it's not that bad of a walk.
No, tee to green proximity is right there, which for me, when you're looking at a place to walk, as long as you have that, I'm fine. I'll climb a mountain. I don't care. But as long as you got that, you're not walking long distances between the two holes. That's what gets me.
Yeah.
And that's obviously when Mike routed the place, he wasn't going to let that happen. So, but yeah, to going back to the grasses on the fairway. So when we seeded the Gray Walls golf course, it was a mix of fine fescue and low-mo Kentucky bluegrass. Okay. Thought process there is, okay, we know these people love their golf carts. They love cart balling. Okay. And that's fine. That's cool. I mean, it's their course, you know? So we had to come up with a grass situation.
Because fescue doesn't handle carts, right?
No, not as well as other grasses, not as well as the bank grass would, or not as well as like a bluegrass would. Okay, but we did not want to go with bank grass fairways here because the cost of chemicals and the inputs it would need to keep it really, really nice. Okay, especially in the wintertime up here with the snow mold pressure that we get up here, that would be a major expense to just spray those all those fairways. So going in. So what can we do? Okay, so we started looking at all the NTAP trials and looking at all the data on the grasses. So we came and we wanted to go with a fine fescue for the low input situation. Okay, well, what can we add with it? Okay, ryegrass doesn't do well up here. Okay, so well, let's go with the bluegrass, which does awesome with traffic. Okay, so now you sit back and you look at the golf course. You can sit back in the fairways. You can look and you can see exactly where the high traffic areas are, because that's where the low-mo Kentucky blue dominates the stand. Okay. All your larger open corridors where there's a lot of room, that's where the fine fescue dominates the stand, okay? And so it's been really fun watching that evolve from the beginning, and it's doing exactly what we wanted it to do. So it's performing perfectly.
It's amazing. And then, like, you've got your cart boundaries where they can't go around the greens, and around every green it's just pure fescue everywhere. Just reacts perfectly.
Around the greens you got a high population of fine fescue, and then a lot of the bent grass bleed off that came off the greens, so combination.
So I've gotten some messages, people saying like, oh, the course is amazing, like the greens just got me. What is that a complaint that you hear a lot and I think one of the things is understanding architecture is a huge benefit if you play here, right?
Huge benefit. You have to think, okay? People don't want to think. They want to play mindless golf in between chugging a beer, okay? That's not this place. You got to think, okay? And if you do that, that's fine, but don't get upset about the result, okay? You just have to really think about, you know, not only the shot into the green, but maybe the shot before, you know, where you want to be, you know, where you're going to get that best angle to get in and have an opportunity to get on the putting surface, okay? Because there's a few that'll get you. You know, 1 and 14 are two perfect examples. I mean, if you don't execute that shot, I mean, you're bunkerless greens too. Bunkerless greens, but they can get you. And those are two that probably I hear about the most, so.
Yeah, it's interesting, like, playing today, perfect example was two. It's on this back tier, and you're hitting over a ravine to get to it. And from the fairway, I just hit it like 25 yards left of the pin.
It was magical.
And it almost went in. And it's, you don't even have to take on the ravine that the green's sitting over. No. You don't ever even have to, but you just, I think that's, you have to look away so much in. It's the same way at Kingsley, where you have to aim away to hit it close a lot of times.
Absolutely. The best approach might not be the direct line to the pin. You know, you think about it, and it's just, it might not be. So, because it's a very visually intimidating place, okay? Both golf courses, Kingsley and Gray Walls, are both visually intimidating. You get over that, you that's step one, okay? And then step two is you get creative, you know? Get creative. Look at the landforms, okay? And maybe work with the land a little bit. You know? Just don't try to attack the pin.
Mm-hmm. It's neat. It's such a cool place, and I think like the more you play it, the more you get it. That's the other thing, is that yes. first time around is like you can get Boom. Sensory overload from all this happening, the rock outcroppings, yeah. this yeah. unbelievable golf holes that you've never seen before. Yeah. But understanding, like, if you allow yourself to have this open mind of like, okay, maybe I should look 5 yards left of a flag and see, okay, I could play it over there and it's going to bank in. But, or if you going around a second time, you'll start to pick up on it.
Yeah. And that's exactly what happened with our membership too. Like, yeah. So our women's association, the first few years after Great Wall's opened, they still held their league on the Heritage Golf Course. Okay. After a couple of years of playing out here a little more, they're like, whoa, we like that. Like, that's what we want every league night. And so they move their league right over here, and so they play over here now. And it's been, and they love it. It's wonderful. We get loads of women that play out here and just have a fantastic time.
Well, there's so many ways for a low trajectory player mm-hmm. to hit the ball close mm-hmm. out here. Like, mm-hmm. every pin's accessible if you understand where to play it mm-hmm. and use the contour. You never, outside of six, the par three up the hill,
yeah,
like that, might be the only shot you have to hit in the air.
Yeah.
You know, everything else you can run up on the ground.
You can play the ground. Yeah. You can play it. So you always have that, you've got that option. Okay. So there's always and that's the thing I like about Mike and Mike's courses. It's, and I preach this to everybody, what makes the best golf course is a golf course that provides lots of options. And the reason being for me is because that opens windows for all the different kinds of golfers to enjoy that golf and all the different kind of golf swings that are out there. Okay. Not everybody hits the same damn shot, right? Some people play left to right. Some people play right to left. Some people hit a low trajectory. Some people hit a high trajectory. Okay. And the fact that he can build these places that kind of cater to all the different, you know, shot options or shot to, I guess, the way they hit the golf ball, you know, it's amazing.
So, you know, we're here, it's August. We're recording it.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. It's like 75.
Wonderful, man. Yeah.
What's the ideal? If say we're, you know, somebody in the Midwest coming up here, and I think after spending time, like I think I'm gonna try and come up every single summer the rest of my life or every year, because it's a magical place. But what is like an ideal trip to Marquette? And or the UP, like should it be just, you know, golf? Like, what are the other things you should do?
Okay, so you come up here to play golf, which I highly, highly encourage everybody to come up and play because it's so cool. Don't just come up here to golf, though. Absolutely do not just come up here to golf. Spend some time. Munising's 45 minutes away. We have Pictured Rocks, okay? Other side of Munising, you've got Grand Marais and the Grand Sable Dunes, which are just mind-blowing. It's 200-foot drop of just sand down to Lake Superior that you can walk down. It's crazy. The waterfalls all over the place. There's little mini hikes all around Marquette that you can just go on. You can walk up Sugarloaf. You can walk up Hogsback. Presque Isle right here in the city park here in Marquette is mind-blowing. And you get out there, and it's so beautiful. This little peninsula out in the lake that's got rock outcrops that you can jump off into the lake. You can go swimming. There's some rocky beaches or sandy beaches, and it's really neat. There's the other thing is biking is huge up here. So if you're into like single track riding, you know, with mountain bikes, you can ride the roads too. There's really good trails for road biking, but the mountain biking up here, insane. It is so good. So mm-hmm. good.
And good breweries.
And good breweries, yes. Shout out to Black Rocks and Ordock.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You can go down to Veerling. They've been here longer than the others, and get a blueberry beer if you want. The blueberries are locally grown here. And they, it's great beer. Absolutely. And it comes from great water, you know, Lake Superior.
That's what they say, Superior water.
Superior water, man. That's why it's Superior beer. Yeah.
I had never seen anything like Lake Superior. My wife and I went on a hike yesterday, and it was unbelievable. We got to this beach. We hiked, you know, 3 miles to this beach, and sure. I mean, the clearest water I've ever seen, and the sandiest beach, no rocks anywhere. Like we were talking, I was like, I mean, do you remember, and you know, the Caribbean ever seeing it? And she's like, no, nothing like this. Like it's absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, you think about the whole shore of Lake Superior, and you think rock. Okay, rock. It's a very rocky place because it's kind of engulfed in the Canadian Shield, but here from Marquette to Munising, we are blessed with beautiful sand beaches. And it's rare to find on the rest of the shoreline.
So when's the best time for golf? If somebody's coming to golf?
Well, all summer. Really, it's just dynamite. June, July, August, September are just unreal. To me, my favorite month is September. That's my favorite month up here. You got cooler nights, and then you start getting into the color change with the trees, and that adds a whole new element to this property. When those leaves change, holy cow. You know, going from the third week of September into, you know, first couple weeks of October is just absolute beauty. Yeah.
It's a special place. So we'll get you out of here on the last one. You know, Langford Moreau, when you get that fully, like, you've played Lawsonia,
Ozaukee, Iron River, and then just reading everything about, you know, Langford Moreau and every picture.
We got to talk about your discovery.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about it. So it's funny. I was telling Craig, I was like, oh, I got this Langford book, this really cool Langford book that somebody sent me. I got to send it to you. And sure enough, tell us about it.
So, yeah. So started getting the club really, really into Langford Moreau, the Green Committee, you know, really getting into it. And one of our Green Committee members, John Bordeaux, came across this document that Langford Moreau wrote on a short document, like 16 pages or something like that. And there was only one copy of it. And it was down in the MSU archive, okay, down in Michigan State. Well, it was really rough shape, and it was like in a safe, and they wouldn't let anybody touch it. And at the time, my wife was, you know, PhD student, so then I'm Meg. I got to like have that. I got to see that. So she kind of looked into it and.
What was your wife saying to you when you were trying to coerce her to like, get in this safe?
She thinks I'm a lunatic. Okay, she thinks I'm loony. Because I talk about this stuff, and that's like what I do. Like I can't stop. You know, I'm addicted to like continue to like reading it on the subject. And she thinks I'm nuts. And so I said, you got to get this for me. Like I got to see it. Like John found it. It's down there. I know you can get access to it. And so she went and talked to the librarian that was in charge there, and they were like, no, we can't. It's in too bad a shape. We can't touch that. And she's like, no, you don't understand. My husband needs this. Like, he keeps bugging me. Like, I want to get this for him. So, at the end of the day, she was able to convince them to pull it out and make photocopies of it. She wasn't allowed to touch it. They could touch it, but they made photocopies. And she brought it back. And I was like, oh, God, just one of the bajillion reasons why I love that woman, okay? And so she got it for me. And so then, I gave Mike a copy, and then we just started getting around. And it's great. I mean, it's awesome. I'm so glad that people do have copies of it, and it's kind of going around, and people see it. Because there's not enough really known about Langford Moreau. I mean, there's just not enough. There's not as much talk. You know, you hear everything about Ross and McKenzie Colton Allison, and you just don't hear as much about Langford Moreau.
I think so much of it is where they did their work. Sure. You know, so much of it, like, you know, there aren't a lot of people that have been to Marquette, and you know,
Lawsonia's like in my top five. I absolutely love that place.
The place is unbelievable, it's remote. It's hard to get to. A guy I know, he was texting me, who's like a very well traveled, architecture nut, you know, write stuff. He was texting me, he was at Lawsonia earlier this summer. He's like, this place is absolutely unbelievable. I'm and it's like
the scale of that place. Yeah, it's so massive and open, and so you just see the vista across the golf course, and it's just like, oh my gosh.
And the greens there are amazing, but it, part of me, like, looking at the greens that you have here, I mean, there are some better greens here than they got at Lawsonia.
By the time I retire up here, I hope to have it all back. Yeah, the Langford greens back. So
the Langford is intermixed in the course. Has there ever been talk about putting it back as a standalone nine?
Just 9 and 9. Yeah, I've talked about it. I've never really pushed it, but I actually kind of made a little scorecard one day on it and showed how it could work, but. It hasn't gotten past that, though.
It'd be neat if they did that.
It would be neat.
It's like, it's, you know, that's the way it was designed.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why they played it for 40 years.
And it's got a cadence and a flow, and it walks. That's something I you start to think about is, and it's really evident here, is like the idea of walking the property,
mm-hmm.
you know, where the routing's kind of naturally how you walk a property and how you would go up. Like, you know, and here is the, you know, that it embodies it well. Like it'd be the natural way you'd walk that property, yeah. The Langford Nine.
Yeah.
Where you'd kind of walk out and you'd be like, oh, then you come and you kind of zigzag over towards the other edge. And it's interesting.
Yeah. And even the one hole, you kind of got to jet back just a little bit, but you just drop your bag off halfway there, you know, because mm-hmm. it's par three. So hopefully you're on the green. You just grab your putter, walk up there, and you kind of walk back. So it flows really, really well, the original nine. Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be special when you get all the greens back. And
it'll be neat. Slow process up here. Baby steps up
here. So. Patient.
That's right, man.
You got all winter to think about this.
I got
this
all
stuff.
Winter to think and read more about it. And
Yeah, how fired up are you when the snow melts and you got your first day?
Oh, God, I'm so excited, man. I just want to, like I said, everybody says, oh, you just got a lot of pressure to get open. I'm like, the pressure I get from them is nothing compared to what I'm putting on myself to get this place open, because I want to tee it, man. Let's go. It's go time. You know, we got to get this stuff done. Let's get this place cleaned up. Let's play.
Yeah, what kind of stuff do you do all winter?
Well, so all winter long, a lot of preparation. So equipment prep, okay? Because when the snow does melt and we get out there, I want everything ready. I don't want to be working on equipment. It's I want it done, all of it. So our 100% focus is on the playing surfaces, getting cleaned up, getting prepped, getting ready for golf, okay? So that's a big part of it, planning, okay? We don't have a general manager here at the club. It's myself and our head professional, Mark Gilmore, and our clubhouse manager, Maggie, and there's an office manager, Bev. Between the four of us, I mean, we operate the club for a board of directors. And so we have to do a lot of that, obviously, that work, that end. And so budget work, you know, planning work, you know, just setting everything up for the year, because it's a madhouse when the year's here, okay? We don't have time to mess around with a lot of that stuff. So the planning is key going into the season and having it dialed. And then on the flip side, like I said, I have three boys. They're big into hockey. So I spend a lot of time in a hockey rink in the wintertime. So
it's a good place for hockey.
It is a good place for hockey. Snowshoeing too. I'm a big snowshoer. So, and I snowshoe the property 2 or 3 days a week, just checking on it, making sure things are good, checking for ice, snow, you know, digging down while I still can. And it builds up into a point where it's hard to dig down. Can't really get to the bottom of a,
you know. Yeah. Is ice damage your biggest kind of fear yes. on the golf course?
It is. It is. And that'll occur if we get a meltdown or a rain event or something in December. That's when I worry. Okay. Because then at that point it can take out a lot of the bank grass as well. If we get later on in the year and we'll get some ice, let's say we late in the season, I don't worry about too much because it might just take out some poa, which is fine. I'm good with that. So,
mm-hmm. Do you cover your greens or anything, or
with sand? I bury them in sand. Bury them in sand and Milorganite, and the Milorganite helps them melt off in the spring. It does really, really well. Kind of gets up in there, sun
human
gets
poop.
On it. Human poop, yes. Yeah, composted, yeah. Human waste. Yeah, great product. Yeah, great product.
I got to get some for my own yard.
You do. Yeah, absolutely. It works wonderful for the homeowner. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. You got to go. You got your boys in a golf tournament today. We got to cut you loose so you can go watch them play.
All right.
So thanks so much for coming on. I hope a bunch of people come visit you in the next few months and then next year.
Absolutely. Yeah. Come on up. We welcome you with open arms up here. You'll have a great time. So.